Following is a meeting with devotees with His Holiness Srila Satsarupa Das Goswami, recorded on January 27, 2002, in Wicklow, Ireland.
So I wanted to today give a travelogue talk about my trip to America. This talk has been delayed week after week by my weak health. If I didn't give it soon, I'd forget some of the juicy details. And Baladev is here to help me remember also. So it's not going to be the most serious of classes, Tattva Shastra. But as a devotee, it's a story of a devotee's travels. And there will be direct preaching in it. So, you know, I give different lectures. Some of them are more philosophical than others.
Take off my sweatshirt.
Reveal my colors. You know, my father was a firefighter. And firefighters, they're the great heroes of New York and of America. Baladev said of the whole world, but I don't know if you are aware, they were the ones who rushed into the World Trade Center, and everyone else in there was trying to get out, and 343 of them died. They went in with no moral ambiguity, just to try to save people. So out of that tragedy, they become great heroes, and they continue to work there even now. At that, it's called Ground Zero, working around among the rubbish to see what they can find in terms of any human remains or clearing it for the next project. So this journey began with anticipation. It was scheduled for December 18, but in the beginning of December or earlier, I started anticipating it. I live so peacefully here, rooted on the hill, limited in geographic area to my walks and my riding. So as I began to think, oh, I'm going to leave here, it began working on my mind. And more in an unfavorable way, my headaches began to increase. And intake of medicine, which was unfortunate because I knew that would happen once I started traveling, but that it began so early was kind of shaky. And I'm a worrying kind of person. Some people tend to worry, other people don't worry, I guess by the psychological nature. Remember that comical picture in Mad Magazine? What me worry? You don't know him? Is a like foolish, kind of ugly young person. And underneath him, he's like the epitome of a fool. And underneath him, there's the motto, what me worry? Some fools don't worry, and some fools do worry. I guess some people who take ultimate shelter at Krishna's lotus feet, they don't worry, but some devotees worry also. So there was plenty to worry about, and one of the things was the security that was being forced. Of people entering America. America was very, still is, very worried about more attacks by terrorists. And so they're trying to monitor anybody coming into the country. So I thought, well, what will this mean to me. I'm going to be searched, and I'm going to be asked so many questions. And they were very, they were up to the point of saying that, you know, they could stop anybody if they want and detain them. There was a big civil liberties argument going on, that they were actually detaining people if they thought they were in any way suspicious, and keep them for indefinite periods of time, for months and months, if they thought they were in any way connected with terrorism. Now, there's no reasonable, no logic to think that a person like me would be like that. But after all, Hare Krishna is not a mainstream type of person. Hare Krishnas are not under pressure in this one, nor are black Africans and so many people who usually get heat. Well, the heat goes on anyone who looks like a Mideasterner. So, but nevertheless, I was worrying about it. Plus, you can also worry about that there could be terrorism on the plane, a bomb planted on the plane. Well, one commentator said, I think it's sick that right now between Ramadan, the Muslim holiday, and Christmas, which is a likely period for terrorist attack, there's actually no check-in, there's no security of check-on luggage. You know, with all the talk of fear of bombs being on planes, none of the planes are checked for whether there's a bomb. And there's a lot of checking of your carry-on luggage, but not the luggage that you put on the plane, except for questions and an occasional random search. So I thought, oh boy, something may happen. Then Baladev was in America, and I asked him, do you think I should wear devotee clothes? He said, well, I don't think you should, not at this time, because they can just pull anybody out in any arbitrary way, and there's nothing you can say back. But then I decided it wouldn't. So a part of my anticipation was plan my wardrobe. I just read Prabhupada saying in the analogy taught by Narada to the Hariyastras, one of the items is, he's talking about a land, and in this land there's a prostitute who wears many different changes of clothes. So in the purport, Prabhupada is saying, we Hare Krishna people, we don't have many changes of clothes. We just have a shaved head and saffron. We don't have to always think about changes of clothes. But now I had to think of what I would wear on the plane. Should I just wear denims, or should I wear something else? I didn't have any clothes anyway. So Baladev bought me clothes. Pair of pants and a shirt. And then I asked Shilaga to get me a cap. And that was a big thing, to get the right cap. And thought it should be kind of an Irish cap. But not, sort of like a golf cap, but not a Dwight Eisenhower model. Anyway, she brought a whole bag over. And one that I put on twice, she laughed at me when that went on. So I said, I better not use that one. But I found one, and I showed her the shirt and pants that Baladev had bought for me. She said, Baladev got these? Did he get them out of a catalog, or did he buy them personally? Because they were so, I think she said it, because they were so smart. And so I said, no, he personally went in and bought them. That was a checked shirt and brownish pants, cotton pants, everything cotton. So that was my clothes. And the visit that I planned, it got bigger and bigger. First, it was going to be just go to Samakrishi's house for the disciples' meeting, then go to Baltimore for doctor, and then come back to Samakrishi, and then return here. But then different people sent me messages, while you're in America, why don't you please visit our preaching center in Hartford, Connecticut? Nobody comes here, and we need encouragement. And so maybe I'll go there. So it was 4.5 hours drive from where I was. And then I thought, if I'm going to go anywhere, I'd like to go to Gita Nagari. So then the Gitanagari itinerary started shaping up, that you can have one morning you give Srimad Bhagavatam class, and then at lunch you can meet with Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, and the next night you can do this. And then, and here I was getting more and more headaches in Ireland, so I decided I'll cancel all that and just go back to the simple program I had planned for. Anyway, the day of the flight came, and on that day, was it the same day Varuna went with Hari Bhaktiya? They went the day before. Yeah, so they went the day before, and at the airport, Varuna called us and said, "I got stopped. Before you approach the desk, you know, with your tickets, now you get stopped by employees of that airline, and they do a less than routine questioning of you. And what you've got in your suitcase, and when you packed it, and since you packed it, has anybody been with it, and so on and so forth." So when they asked Varuna, they weren't satisfied. And actually, he heard one man whisper to the other, "Well, he's got an American passport." And the other one said, "Oh, nevertheless." So they said, "What's in the suitcase?" And he didn't even know what was in one of the suitcases, because Baladev had packed it. And Baladev has this concept that of nectar of things that I've used, that old socks, old jackets, things like that, boots, and they should be carried and given out to devotees. He's enthusiastic to that even, so the devotees may not be. So one suitcase was filled with that, and it was at the last minute. Varuna didn't even know what was in it, so he just made up some other things. And then to his surprise, the man said, "Open it up." So he had to open it up, and when he saw when Varuna saw these things, he said, "Oh yeah, it's." And then he began saying what was in there, but it was all harmless stuff. And so they went through it all, and they said, "All right." So he closed up the suitcases, and then, as a parting remark, Varuna said, "I notice you're only stopping brown people, and even at security places, you know, where they say don't make jokes about bombs, he would make bombs. He would make some remark. Sometimes a man would say, how do they put it?
Like, do you really want to say that?"
And then he would back off. But this time he said, "I notice you're only stopping the brown people." Well, that's called racial profiling, and they do it, and they even defend it. And you didn't get stopped there, Hari Bhakti. You got stopped a little further. But going through the x-ray, then they ask you to open your bag.
Yeah.
Now they have, even after you go through everything, then you're finally going into the tube to get onto the plane, and there are three tables, either in the tube itself or just outside, and they can stop you right there, and they do it in a random way. And there was one lady, she got disgusted and exasperated after everything she had been through. Now again, they were asking her, and she made a fuss. Again, she said, "I'm just tired of all these searches." And again, they didn't take it lightly. They said, "Look, you don't have to get on this plane, you know. This plane can leave without you. This is a federal regulation." And she just quieted down and again submitted to yet another search. But we got through very easily. Sri Bhavati said, you'll get through all right. And we did. We didn't get stopped anywhere. So everything looked like it was going to be easy. And soon we found ourselves sitting in the lounge under the big, under the wall with all the pictures of Irish people who made it big in America, from Kennedy to this one and that one. I just couldn't take my eyes off it. I was just looking at it. The time went by. And right under it, there was a man. I think he was drunk or something. He was stretched out over three seats. And he remained like that even when the plane was finally called. They had to shake him and wake him up. And asked him what he was doing there, and he looked around and found his ticket, and then he got on the plane. But we had this real unfortunate connection, which I'm not going to do anymore. It's the plane goes to Shannon and then to America. A 25-minute flight with a huge plane. And that's when they have accidents, too. The first 7 minutes up in the air and the first 7 minutes down. The last 7 minutes down. So why you have to go to Shannon, it just doesn't make any sense. But Baladev convinced me, not anymore, though, that it's better because you can get a flight straight to New York, but there's such traffic jams in New York City, and more, and possibly more security there, too. So we got on our plane, and this was just before Christmas, December 18th, and there was a delay, and the captain announced the delay in a most polite way, that there was fog in Shannon, and it was below the legal limit for them to take off and land there. So we'd have to wait for indeterminate time. This is real difficult for me. When there's music being played, I'm very sensitive to music. I can't just tune it out. I listen to it, even if it's what I consider poor music or music that I don't like. That would be a good hell for me, put me somewhere with loud music I don't like. So, we were playing these Sufi Christmas tunes, and it was a short loop that, you know, I think it was every like 15 minutes it came back again. And one was White Christmas. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas. But that's not a bad song. It's one of the most popular songs in history of popular music. But it's the original is Bing Crosby. But here they had a man who was just doing an imitation of Bing Crosby. And that really irritated me. It was all the same arrangement and everything. Singers in the back, but it wasn't a Bing. And then another song that was from the 1940s that reminded me of my mother and father at war. Also was a Bing Crosby. Very, I don't know. It's so similar to I'm Dreaming of a White Christmas because it's a dreamy. I'll be home for Christmas. I'll be home for Christmas. You can count on me. Please have a mistletoe and presents on the tree. Christmas Eve will find me where the love light beams. I'll be home for Christmas if only in my dreams. So it's like a song for the military man who's overseas in the war. And for his wife, and you know they can't be together, but they can only be together in his dreams. I was very, very young, so I can't claim I remember hearing that sung, but that was certainly the mood in our house. Daddy wasn't there, and especially at Christmas time, it was underlined, and Mother was so lonely for him. And that song really captured the heartstrings of America. So I had to hear that and all these other corny Frosty the Snowman and Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. That's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. And then he announced that we're still waiting for the fog to clear, and now we're going to have to de-ice the wings. We've been sitting here and our wings are frozen. Then he said, now they're sitting there and the engines are running. He said, now we're going to have to refuel the engines, they refueled the plane. So it was about 45 minutes or an hour sitting there in a terrible situation. So finally we went there. And I don't know why they do this. When they get there, they say, all right, everyone has to get off the plane, and you can go right away to the duty-free shops. So they're very proud of their duty-free shop in Shannon. I think it was one of the first ones in the world or something. And Baladev thinks that the whole thing is an arrangement to get people to go into the duty-free shops while the plane flies there. That sounds extravagant, but at least they expect you to spend your time by doing that. Anyway, finally... We got back into our plane, and without too much delay, he pushed off from the gate and got, you know, into a more distant position and running the engines and waiting. I was just waiting for something to happen. And then the captain, the captain speaking, the good news is that we pulled out from the gate. The bad news, that's a regular double line now, people talk like that, or journalists start with the good news. The bad news is that we're having engine trouble. He said, it's no big deal, it's just a little thing. And then he said what it was in real technical terms. He said, I don't expect you to understand that. Something about the turnover on the catch on the motor run, something. I didn't know what it, nobody knew what it was. He said, it's no big thing, but we can't leave until it's fixed. So maintenance has suggested that we turn off the engines and then turn them on again. And this might fix it. He said, so we're going to do that now, and if that doesn't work, then we'll let you know what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. So then, he turned off the engines, and everything was quiet. And then there was a pause, and then started the engines up again. And he said, oh, it looks like maintenance was right. He said, we don't know why. We don't know why it worked. He said, but I assure you it's working again. And everything is perfectly fine. We wouldn't be leaving if it wasn't. It made you feel so unconfident that he really... You just turn your machine off and turn it on again. So then we were on our journey over the ocean, and I always get the if we can I get the window seat. Baladev is the middle, and then there's someone who sits on the aisle with us. Baladev is a very good preacher to people in that situation. Last time we were together in the Caribbean, we talked to, actually there were two ladies. How could there be two if there's... Oh, there were two ladies together, and he was speaking to them. They were pious kind of ladies. What were they? One was an American Friends religion? Quakers. And he so interested them with Krishna consciousness and gave one of them the Bhagavad Gita that some months later, one of them sent him a check, $75, and the other sent him a thank you note. So he's very good at that. One time we were flying in... There was a sophisticated lady, although dressed very casually in jeans and a sweater. She was a journalist who was going for a magazine. She was going to interview some big businessmen in South America. And they got to talking. The way to start talking is that shared lunch. We had a big lunch that somebody had given. And she started, she said, this is like, she mentioned some book, you know, such and such book, where the character, his wife would pack him a big basket of lunch, and he would use it as an introduction to talk to people on the train. So he said, no, I don't know that reference to literature. But she was so learned in literature, she knew his character. But she got very interested in his talking too. But this time there was a college girl who was, looked like about 6'2", blonde girl, but very childish. And she was in anxiety that she had a connecting flight to Atlanta, and she was very worried about that. She wouldn't make it. And Baladev was assuring her that we'd probably make up time and make it. So he tried. Of course, I'm just shyly hanging there by the window, making my notes and overhearing what he's saying. And sometimes he mentions something about me, and they look over at... who I am. And he told her, oh yeah, so he tried gradually getting to some spiritual talk, and many times they are interested, but she wasn't interested. She was a sort of immature person. And also, unfortunately, she wasn't interested in prasadam. We had sandwiches. We had peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, cream cheese with olive sandwiches, and cheddar cheese and ginger sandwiches are very good, but she she looked at it and she said, no thanks. And a few other things, no thanks. But somehow, but after a while, about halfway across, a little later, she looked and maybe she was thinking of waiting in the airport for that plane connection. And she was a big girl, too, physically. And maybe she was thinking of working up her hunger. She looked and said, all right. And she took the whole thing that we had left over. You know, it amounted to a big bag. And so we felt it was a Krishna conscious victory that she finally walked. When we finally got there, she was full of, goodbye. Thanks very much. Goodbye. Thanks for the sandwiches. And she could just about manage it with her other packages. So, of course, there are films. There was two full feature films, one after another. There were light films. I have no earplugs. I took off my eyeglasses, so I couldn't get involved in it. But I think one was a Woody Allen film, and the other one was also light comedy. And then at the end of that, they had a Beverly Hillbillies comedy TV show, and finally got there. Fortunately, not much involved in that. Our luggage, we had one big piece of luggage either, each maximum size luggage, Delphi. Whenever we have luggage, it's always stamped heavy on it by the people, because it's Baladev has this method of packing luggage, and I look at it, you can't pack that much. Packs it right up to the top. He said, no, this is only one quarter full. These suitcases, they can take a lot. It gets this big mound, and then the top comes down. And he sits on it till it clicks, and then he puts belts around it, and he says, well, even if it popped open, the belts will keep it tight. That's another anxiety for me, seeing him overpack this luggage and just imagining it spilling somewhere. But we had to wait for our luggage. I think they unpacked it last because it was so heavy. And then there was a jam up through customs because usually customs is, you know, no security. Everyone just goes through real fast, like they do in Ireland. And you give your card up. But here they had it siphoned into one lane and it was slower. Now, one of the Varuna met us and we got into a car. We had about a half hour, 40-minute drive to Samit Rishi's house in New Jersey. You know, the first thing that really struck me was the proliferation of American flags. Wow. Everything is American flags. And at least, to say, 40 to 45% of the cars have American flag in the back window and or flying on a stick. Billboards have American flags. And even... houses, some houses have American flags painted on. Some journalists refer to it as flaggery, this tendency now of Americans to, and like businesses and buildings, they have a big pole and a huge American flag flying from it. So they're really into their nationalism. They've been hurt and they're angry about what happened. And they have all the slogans, God bless America, and so on and so forth. But I was shocked to see it because last time I'd been there, it hadn't been like that. Then we arrived in New Jersey. Samit Rishi has this very big house. His neighbors call it the Taj Mahal. It's so big, and so I kept hearing that he had a renovated basement for me to stay in. It's all covered with a rug and fluorescent lights, and I was trying to estimate the size. I just have it in American terms. It's about 4,000 square feet. All I can say is the Irish mentality is like the size of a soccer field from end to end. And it had an art room. So I had from December 19 to 24 free to paint. And I painted like anything. I had two sessions a day, and when I finished the painting, I had a room with beautiful lighting in it, much better than I have here. I saw reds and greens and blue for the first time, what those colors really are, and there were some devotees, they supplied me canvases and paints and brushes. As much as my health would allow me, I was painting. And when the painting was finished, we brought it out into this main big room. But eventually the whole big room was filled up with paint. And we made a discovery of a new instrument. We have felt sticks. Chaitanya had found felt sticks, of course. Felt sticks are common enough. But a kind of felt stick that will stick on canvas. He had it in size 5 millimeter. But we found it in 500 millimeter. It's like there's a stick, and then at the top of it, it comes out like that. I don't know if Shivavati's going to be able to find this. It's made by the Zig Company. And well, I really went to town with that. And it's like a whole new period for me. All these colors that they have. And then there are two disciples of mine. Before they were devotees, they were graffiti artists. And they met, in fact. You know them? Krishna Kirtan and Jaya Satchinandana. So they said, well, they gave me as a gift some homemade graffiti instruments that they use that you can't buy in stores. They bought these things that are used for toning up sneakers. They have white substance in them and a felt top. You know, and you have a scuffy, dirty sneaker, and you run it over it, and it becomes clean. So they empty out the white substance, and then they put India ink in. And then you're marking it very bold, and then if you squeeze it a little, then it drips. So they said, try these out, and I was really turned on by them and the effects. And we've duplicated that here, too, pretty well. Chaitanya found something. But we have a long way to go in trying to find more different things that we can use in colors and so forth. So I really had fun with those things. Shilavati asked me to talk about my trip and said, tell the high points and the low points. So the low points were headaches, and I don't want to get into it, you know, this day, that day, this day. But it was like an all-pervading low throughout the trip, and it got worse and worse. I had to keep increasing the medication. And then when the days came for meeting people, then it got more intense. So it's like it was the misery to the whole trip, and makes me not want to go on more trips. But I'll tell you about that a little later, except to say that in one sense it was a terrible experience taking a trip, and I was I had been seriously lining up going to the Holy Dham, Vrindavan, in December or January. But now the thought of traveling again is very unappealing to me. On Christmas Day, we had a smaller group come over, not the full Vyasa Puja group, just like an invited group. And I gave a lecture. I read something from the Bible. We're running out of time, I see. One thing I read the section that Prabhupada, you may know, it's in Prabhupada Meditations, was once thinking of a Krishna conscious commentary on the Bible, and he asked me to do it. So I picked a selection of Christmas, how Mary was asked to become the mother of Jesus, and the events leading up to the Christmas story. So I read that, told about Prabhupada and the event, and how he decided not to do it. But then I made a little commentary about Mary. The Christians love her, the Catholics especially. There's very little given in her about her, but this the opening lines where she says, in effect, she says, "What do you want with me?" When the angel appears to her, she's so humble, and he asks her to become the mother of Jesus. She says, "How could I be a mother? I've never known any man." And he says, "This will be a different conception. You won't be materially conceived, and you'll be always famous for this." And she says, "In effect, you know, your will be done. Behold the handmaiden of the Lord. I'll do whatever you want." And I said, "How?" These weren't cheap words, because what this meant to her when she was seen to become pregnant She was engaged at that time to Joseph, but she wasn't supposed to have had sex with him. So she was Jewish, and the Jewish law was that she should be stoned to death for that. So as she was seen to become pregnant, she would have to face that. She would also have to face breaking off her relationship with Joseph, because he wouldn't want to have anything to do with her. But she said, "Behold, the handmaiden of the Lord," and was willing to take that. And then Joseph had a dream that he should take part in this too. So it was sweet being able to talk about her, and especially. And that was Christmas Day. And then I also spoke how at Christmas, people, they don't so much talk about the religious aspect as family get-togethers. It's a great day for the family to come together. And so we were doing that too. Our devotee family was gathering. And this was the real family. That afternoon I met with my godbrother who came, Shesha Prabhu, and that was a rare treat. I hadn't seen him since 1994. And we were talking about doing what you want to do in Krishna consciousness, and he felt burdened by having to do so much management and was wondering, why do I have to do this? And he was weighing it in his life, maybe coming to a crossroads. He felt he was doing good for Prabhupada and had done good up to now, but how long do I have to do this, he said. Is there a time when I can do what I want? I said, well, what do you want to do? And he wasn't so clear on that. But he felt he was still functioning well, making the contribution he is making. Also, another nice thing about him, he's an attorney, and he makes money that way, mostly handling devotee cases, immigration, and so forth. But he doesn't have an office. He doesn't make much arrangements for making money. I had recited the Lord's Prayer as part of the Christmas talk. Give us this day our daily bread. He said, I kind of think like that. I just depend on Krishna. I don't make much effort for... I could keep your feedback on the floor. Oh, I'm sorry. It's not on the floor. He said, he doesn't make so many huge arrangements, and yet he gets by. There was another devotee lawyer who went to the top law school and who took the best, wealthiest, wealth-bringing position he could get, and yet everything went bad for him. He lost his wife, he lost his job, and he's not even practicing law anymore. And Shesha took such a low profile so that he could continue sadhana, and he's still living. He's getting his daily bread and doing devotional service. It was a good testimony that Krishna will provide for you. Then Vyasa Puja Day, about 150 to 200 devotees came, and they were able to fit through such a big room. The lecture I gave was a series of questions I made for myself. How have you evolved as a spiritual master over the years? And different questions like that. They'll be coming out on the tape ministry, so I won't dwell on them now. Then, you know, each year I try to think of something for the devotees to say that's a little different than they're just standing up and making a glorification speech. So you may remember last year I asked and devotees here, what was some difficult situation you went through and how I helped you. So I asked them just to tell an anecdote involving me. So I defined anecdote, it's just a story in effect, and gave a few anecdotes from the nectar, Prabhupada Nectar book. So then when they had a good grasp of what an anecdote is, I let them loose. And starting with the earliest initiated, one after another came up and they spoke, and there were some of them were very funny, some of them were very serious, and but it was great just hearing these little stories told one after another. Have any general remarks about that, the anecdotes? No. Yeah, it was very
it's formal.
Yeah. And there were many faces that I had never, that I hadn't seen in a long time. So while they spoke, they were looking at me face to face, and some devotees had been gone a long time and had gone through so much rough handling of the material nature, and they showed up at the Vyasa Pooja meeting and had some memory from way back. Some of them I couldn't remember, but as they told it, then it was some wonderful little story or something they shared. That was an all morning. We went like that as long as I could last. I did an hour and a half. That's all I could do. In the afternoon, I did an hour and a half, but they weren't at all finished. They were only up to about 1979. So I said, "That's it. I can't speak. I can't stay here and listen anymore. But you please go on telling the anecdotes." So I retired, and they did. They continued telling the anecdotes, and I was glad that they did. Next morning, I gave a talk. I had prepared these talks. The topic was terrorism and war. And I won't try to summarize it now. Then in the afternoon, I had an art show. And it was quite similar to the art show I had here some weeks ago. And remember, it was all black and white. And there was no format to it. I just took out one picture after another and pointed to it and told something. That's when my godbrother, Nishinananda, was here and read the words and said something. So this was all the paintings. We had 50 paintings that I had done in a few days before the show. It was quite a daring thing from my point of view, I felt, in showing them. And some liked them, some didn't take to them, I don't think. But I dared to show them anyway and explain them. I had a picture of a rat. I drew a rat. It said Ratto. And then I explained that we had rats in our yard. The next picture I had a cat. And I said, so in order to deal with the rat, we got a cat. Here's a picture of the cat. He's called Hari Bol. And then it turned out that there was a series of pictures about cats. One picture said something like, feed your cat, pet your cat, love your cat, but don't become like Maharaj Bharat, you know, who got too much of the pet and turned into an animal in his next life. And had a picture of a person becoming a cat. And so I showed all these pictures. And then toward the end, when there were questions, this devotee who came here a couple of times, Nitai Das, he said he had been in the house, he saw the cat. Saw me petting the cat. Yeah, I had a picture of the cat in my lap. I was petting the cat. So he said, when I was at your house, I saw you with the cat, and I thought, I will never tell anyone that Guru Maharaj has a cat. He said, and now you've shown the pictures. He said, you're so open. And then I got a question. Oh, in the question and answer section, which is the last class, from a girl in the Lachua, or a woman, and she has 11 cats. So she wrote, now that the cat is out of the bag, please tell me, why are devotees so cruel to animals? Why are they so much against pets? And so, I told one anecdote after another about how great devotees were kind to pets. I told the story of how Yudhisthira gave shelter to a dog, and only on that basis he was allowed into heaven. And Maharaj Rantidev, who gave his last food to the dogs, and Maharaj Shibi, who protected the pigeon, and so on and so forth. Tell those stories. But I showed different paintings, and there was one painting I did a self-portrait, and on one side I was being punched. On the right side, and the other side I was being blessed. Then I did the picture of myself and Prabhupada. And then he was doing the art show, and suddenly someone spoke up, and it was Rabindra Swarup's wife, Sodamini, who's a very senior devotee. I was really surprised, like, that she was there, like, not the home crowd. But she had a pleasant look on her face, and she said, "That picture where you're being punched on one side, is that Prabhupada who's blessing you?" I said, "Well, no, it's not exactly Prabhupada, it's just an angel or something." She said, "Oh, it's a generic blessing." I said, "Yeah, something like that." So she was there. Oh, and Baladev, you said, "Tushesha, how did you like the art show?" He said, you're a spy from the GBC, aren't you?" He said, "Oh, everybody calls me that." He said, "I like that one picture, racing number 3. I had a series, race number 1, race number 2, race number 3. You have to give him that, you should. So, and then Varuna outrageously raised his hand, and he said, "You know, I don't really like these paintings. They don't really turn me on." He said, "I have to say this, but if you like them, then I like them." And he's so generous about it that he's a great supporter of the art. He wrote me a letter later, and he said somebody came up to him and said, "Why don't you cut your guru a break? Stop criticizing." So the art show, I was really fired up during the art show, with no shyness or hesitation, showing the pictures, and was in my element. Somebody said, "The first time you showed art, you were biting your fingers and until they were bleeding, and you seemed so hesitant. You're really getting more confident about showing it, I noticed. But I don't care if they like it or not." What, how could I, with all the encouragement I'm getting? I read them the Jessica Dawson review in the Washington Post, and the success of the art show at Govinda. Then the next morning I gave a talk on failure and hope, and then those questions and answers. Then I did something I didn't expect to do, initiation. Different people were submitting their names. So on a Sunday we had a big initiation, big for me. It was about 5 or 6 first initiations and a few second initiations. And I visited the temple to Waco to do it there. Then I had an eye examination. The main reason I went is the eyeglasses I had, they make these big red pinching marks on both sides of my eyes. So I wanted different eyeglasses. He said I didn't need new prescriptions, but I chose new frames. And I looked at the wall, and I think, oh, these different eyeglasses. And the style now is like 95% of the eyeglasses are small, a little bit like what Tim has. And this devotee, Nitai, he wears glasses like that. Oh, I must be like 20 years behind. Everybody's got different, because my eyeglasses were really big and very, very thick. The rims with the thick horn rim. So, but I didn't want these half size. So I said I want a circular. So I'm not an impersonator. What do they call it? A person who can impersonate. Paladev and I have had a lot of fun about the man who was servicing us, and what a salesman, what a great salesman he was, and when he was figuring out the different deals. I wanted a backup pair too in case I lost these. He was, you know, double talking all the different deals we were trying to get. You buy one, you get one free, and he was telling all the benefits. And one thing he said, "I'm not charging you anything for the premises." In other words, as if it was a consideration that coming into his store I should be charged for that. And as soon as you walk into the store, he's saying, "Did you get here all right? You know, is the parking all right?" And just surrounding you with chatter and talk and deals and everything. He said, "Am I going to get hard cases with these?" "Absolutely." And anything you ask, you got some answers for. "Oh, yeah. I said I'd like some lens cleaner." And he got a bottle, and he pointed to it. He says, $2.95. So
Baladev got out the actual cash and gave it to him, and then he slid it back. He said, "That's all right. You can keep it." So even the way he did it, he didn't first say, "I was thinking, well, isn't he? We're making a big purchase. Isn't he just going to give it to us?" But no, he said, $2.95, and only when you give the money, then he's so generous. He's got all these things worked out. And then he didn't think he could deliver them on time. I said, "Uh-oh." I said, we're going back Friday to Ireland. And then he began to boast that he was going to come through I'm a producer thing. You're pretty good too, Baladev. You said, "This is an international sale. This is big bills." Like you said, you better deliver. You were a man of his heart, I think. The trip to Baltimore and going to the doctor was fun too. Seeing Dr. Crohe, and he saw me in the flesh. I saw him in his office first, and then he said, "I'm going to have to give you a physical examination." And I looked glum when he said that. He said, "Well, I don't like it any more than you do." But then we went to the next room, and I had to strip down, and he was, poking and looking at everything. But as he did it, he was making jokes, and just to make it lighter, and he had a couple of jokes that were worth repeating. He said, George Bernard Shaw, the playwright, and Winston Churchill, they never got along. So once George Bernard Shaw sent a couple of tickets to the Prime Minister and said, "Here are two tickets for the opening night of my new play." He said, "One is for you, and one is for your friend, if you have any." So Winston Churchill sent the tickets back and said, "I'm sorry, but I can't use these tickets. I can't attend the play. You can use them for the second night, if there is any." Now, one time, Winston Churchill got drunk, and he was leaving some function, and a woman came up to him and said, "Mr. Prime Minister," he said, you're drunk now." He said, "Madam, I am drunk," he said, "but you are ugly. Tomorrow morning, I will be sober." So you can imagine this going on while your knee is being tapped and your heart is being checked and everything. So this doctor, he boasts about, because I talk to him a lot, and he knows the Irish medical facilities aren't up to American standards. So he was showing off how now I would get all this different work done very quickly. I would get a chest x-ray and blood taken, and the results would come back real fast. And he said, "We can do all this for you." He said, "You want to buy a car?" He said, "We can do anything for you." And so I did. I got my paperwork, and I went to the technicians, and I skipped. It's getting late, but I just can't resist some of it. When we got when we first got to his office, he has a very likable secretary. His name is Ruth. And Baladev was a patient of the same doctor. So the doctors have different booths where their secretaries are, and they take phone calls. They have like a light plastic thing they speak into on their earphone. So she wasn't there. And then suddenly she appeared. She was all harried. She said, "Oh, this is a terrible day today." And then she saw us, and she smiled and shook our hands very genially. And then we gave her some apple crumble that we had just brought her. And she immediately, she held up the people she was talking to, and she began eating it. And then, while I was inside, Baladev told me later, she said to him, "How are you feeling? How are you feeling about your marriage being broken up?" He said, "Don't feel bad." He said, "My marriage broke up 2 months ago also." He said, "I had to call the police to get him out." And he said, "Anyway, I've got a new boyfriend now." So he's about 45 years old. He said, "I've got a new boyfriend now." So Baladev said, "Well, I don't think I'm going to do that. I'm going to enter the monastery." He said, "Oh, I could never do that." She said, I'm too selfish. I'm religious, but I could never do that. I said, it was like a typical American or Western response to the thing. Wait a couple of months and then get a new boyfriend. But then I went to the technicians to get all these tips, all these things tips. And I got Harriet's boot. She was sort of a middle-aged black lady. Almost all the technicians were black women. And they're talking back and forth while they're working. There was one woman, she was short. She had a haircut like a U.S. Marine. It was like all shaved on the side. And then, what was the top sort of just sticking out? Flat top, like a male would have more. And she was strutting around and talking. And in fact, she just announced, in the middle of work, she announced, I'm going to the potty, she announced to her friends, and walked out. And now I was waiting for Harriet. And then she came. She said, well, Dr. Crowley has a lot of work for you. And they were having a debate, the workers. On Christmas Day, an Arab-American had been taken off a plane by the captain by racial profiling. Said, you can't fly, we suspect you might be a terrorist. So now he was suing the airline. So they were debating. Some of the technicians thought it was right, some thought it was wrong. And then Harriet looked at me and she said, I saw a bumper sticker that said, Jesus is coming. She said, I think if he comes, he's going to be in pieces over all the things that people are doing. It's really sick. And I told Dr. Cohey that recently on the phone. He said, oh, Harriet has got a lot of homespun wisdom. And she was nice to me. I had a meeting with Chris at Dr. Gupta's house where I was staying. He was his usual enthusiastic self. His next aim is to get another gallery showing for me. And he showed me a 3-minute video, which I want to show to you. Let me just wind this up, and then I'll show the video at the end. I didn't do much more painting. I was getting sicker after that. And then we met again with Chris. He came over to see the paint that I had done and liked it very much. And then we got our plane back safely here.